This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Malaysia's Coast Guard has made its largest ever seizure of methamphetamine, a top official said Sunday, seizing over 2 tons of the drug disguised as tea in a shipment believed to have come from Myanmar. The chief of the Coast Guard said the drugs found on a boat in northern Penang State were worth over $26.2 million. A local suspected trafficker was arrested. The chief said the drugs appeared to have been smuggled from Myanmar's Golden Triangle. The intercepted shipment was likely destined for neighboring countries where it would fetch a higher price than in Malaysia, he added. In recent years, Malaysia has made a number of seizures of highly addictive crystal meth. The Southeast Asian country itself is battling a major drug addiction problem. Voters in the West African country of Niger cast ballots Sunday in municipal and regional polls 2 weeks ahead of a presidential election, which the incumbent will not contest because his 2 terms are up. The ruling PNDS party is the overwhelming favorite in Sunday's poll, and its presidential candidate is the front runner in the December 27th ballot. Some 7.4 million people are eligible to vote in the long-delayed polls in the country's 266 municipalities. Many parts of the Sahel countries west and southeast have suffered repeated jihadist attacks since 2015, preventing people from registering to vote, according to the National Electoral Commission. The current president, who was elected in 2011 and 2016, has won praise for his decision to step aside for a successor, unlike some counterparts on the continent who have pushed through constitutional changes in order to extend their presidencies. For more on these and other stories making international news headlines, please visit our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Workers at a Pfizer factory in the U.S. state of Michigan dispatched the first shipments of its COVID-19 vaccine shortly after 6:30 a.m. on Sunday, launching the largest and most complex vaccine distribution project ever in the United States. The first shots will be administered as early as Monday. Healthcare workers and elderly people in long care facilities are expected to be the main recipients of the first wave of 2.9 million shots this month. The directors of 5 of Switzerland's largest hospitals have written to the health minister asking for urgent measures to reduce coronavirus infections, a Swiss newspaper reported on Sunday. In their letter, the directors of the university hospitals of Zurich, Bern, Basel, Lausanne, and Geneva said the pandemic was forcing them to postpone operations for patients with other life-threatening conditions while intensive care beds were becoming scarce. Bahrain's National Health Regulatory Authority said Sunday it had approved the registration of a coronavirus vaccine developed by China National Pharmaceutical Group, or Sinopharm. The statement did not specify which vaccine among the two being developed by Sinopharm, but cited data from phase 3 clinical trials that show an 86% efficacy rate and said Bahrain had participated in those trials. The Brazilian government has unveiled its long-awaited national vaccination plan against COVID-19 with an initial goal of vaccinating 51 million people, or about one-fourth of the population, in the first half of 2021. In a document sent to the Supreme Court, which had given the government a deadline to draw up the plan, the health ministry said 108 million doses will be available for priority vaccination of vulnerable groups that include health workers, elderly people, and indigenous communities. South Korea's president warned Sunday that COVID-19 restrictions may be raised to the highest level after a second day of record increases in cases as the country battles a harsh third wave of the infection. Germany will close most stores from Wednesday until at least January 10th, cutting short the busy Christmas shopping season as it tightens coronavirus restrictions and tries to rein in the spread of the disease, Chancellor Angela Merkel said on Sunday. She told journalists after the meeting with leaders of the country's 16 federal states that Christmas shopping has increased social contacts and that lighter measures are not now possible. For more on these stories and others, we invite you to visit our website at voanews.com. Via remote, Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
I think we should just say to Ghana, thank you for being a model for election. Thank you for this tradition, you know, that is now long-standing, peaceful transfer of power through a transparent, free, fair election process. Let's accord Ghana what they deserve. Let's applaud them.
The head of the ECOWAS poll observer mission says Ghana's recent elections were transparent and credible.
We have different strategies. We have an engagement strategy, an advocacy strategy, a media strategy, and we also have a judicial strategy because we are taking those cases to regional courts because we know that there is no rule of law in Togo and our political prisoners can never find and obtain justice in Togo.
Togolese civil society groups demand the immediate release of prominent opposition figure Bridget Ajamagbo Johnson.
The MMD has its own traditional ways of raising its money, including subscription from its members, which is going on very well. Well-wishers also do donate. But in this particular case, to be just to be clear, he did not go to raise money for the party ahead of the 2021 general election.
And a major Zambian opposition party denies a report that its leader is under arrest in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The head of the ECOWAS poll observer mission says Ghana's recent elections were transparent and credible. Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf says despite reports of isolated cases of violence, the voters had no problem casting their vote. She also complimented officials of the Electoral Commission, including those at the polling stations, for carrying out their duties professionally. Her remarks come after the chairperson of the commission, Attorney Jean Adukwe Mensah, declared incumbent President Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo winner of the presidential election with 51.59% of the total vote cast. His main challenger, former President John Dramani Mahama, came in second with 47.36%. But the former president has rejected the outcome of the election, citing voter irregularities. In part two of my interview with Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the former Liberian president and head of the ECOWAS Election Observer Group, she says there are institutions available to resolve any concerns the main Ghanaian opposition leader may have about the outcome of the recent polls.
Madam President, accepting the outcome of an election is an integral part of the electoral process. The losing candidate, former President John Dramani Mahama, and his officials have rejected the outcome of the poll, expressing concern about certain figures. How do you think this process should move forward? Of course, the Electoral Commission or electoral laws have a way of addressing them. As a former politician yourself, a stateswoman as well, how do you think this process should move forward in terms of addressing their concerns in the run-up to the former installation of the second term of Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo, president-elect of Ghana?
Well, let's first say one has the right to question any doubts that one has about election results, particularly if you're a candidate, you have that right. Ghana has established mechanisms to address questions and concerns about the results of the election. In addition, we would like to note that the National Peace Council is an established mechanism for dialogue. So I would expect that it's challenged, you know, by the one who lost the election. If it's challenged legally, it's one thing. I also expect that it will be accorded by the Peace Council the opportunity for dialogue to ensure that there's satisfactory answers to those questions. And I believe there will be. You know, it will be properly addressed. And at the end of the day, I think you will see the two sides coming together, not only in Parliament, you know, where they're just about have equal strength in terms of their numbers, but also coming together for the common agenda of the development and prosperity of God.
Madam President, you know, as you went around, I'm sure you interacted with some of the poll officials. Some people say Ghanaians have a high expectations of transparency and credibility of the elections. How will you assess how the elections were organized in terms of its transparency and credibility?
Everything we saw about the process accorded transparency to it. The votes were cast in open spaces where everyone could see how the vote was done. And it was not just polling officers or voters or party agents or security. It was also watched by ordinary citizens. As long as they preserved the distancing, they could watch the process. That's as transparent as it could be. And so if there were any infractions, I think those were quickly addressed. One or two of them were reported, but they were quickly addressed either by security if it meant something that had to do with the use of force or illegal use of something. And it was just something where an honest error here and there, I think, was adjusted. So let's give Ghana what the Ghana citizens what they deserve. That, first of all, their attitude toward a peaceful election is so appealing, is so applaudable, you know. Their participation in the vote with the demeanor of casting their vote and moving away quickly is something that is exemplary. The professionalism of all of those at the polling places is once again something to be applauded. And so I think we should just say to Ghana, thank you for being a model for election. Thank you for this tradition, you know, that is now long-standing, peaceful transfer of power through a transparent, free, fair election process. Let's accord Ghana what they deserve. Let's applaud them. They deserve it. The Ghana citizen.
Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is a former Liberian president and head of the ECOWAS Election Observer Group. She spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Joseph Anochi is a Ghanaian geodetic engineer and technology manager. He has worked with various international organizations, including the National Aeronautics and Space Administration in the U.S. as a telecommunications service manager. Anochi is the Information Technology Director for the governing New Patriotic Party, NPP. He is credited with leading a team of computer professionals to speed up the coalition of results of two elections, including the last. Analysts say he has helped to digitize the vote in Africa by deploying modern technology and helped his party win back-to-back elections. I caught up with Joseph Anochi at the NPP Coalition Center hours after incumbent President Akufo-Addo was re-elected.
You need to have a framework. You need to have the ground that is ready to support you. You know, it is always said that technology drives innovation, right? And innovation drives market share. And so when I was called upon to do this job, it was very clear to me. Once I understood how the traditional system worked, so then the question I asked myself, you know, how do you innovate? And so, you know, I spoke with a few people. I learned from a few of the innovations that have brought to many of the very successful political campaigns, the Obama campaign, the Romney campaign, and many others in around the world. And that's what we set forth to do.
I heard your campaign manager saying that this has transformed the way campaigning is done in this country. But are you getting opposition? Are people learning from what you have achieved here? And does that say that emulation or copy basically shows that you are way ahead of the game?
That's a good question. You know, in 2016, it was a greenfield. It was a greenfield. Nothing had been done in this level and been successful. And so in 2016, we began to innovate, to bring new people in. And in 2020, we expanded the team as we speak. We have a good number of these young men and women who have left their jobs to come and volunteer to get this thing successful. So actually the success, I'll tell you, it's not even here. Because here we don't do any data entry. all the data entry is done where at the constituency level. I'm very sure that in the next few years, right, this will balloon. And it is good for Ghana, right? You know, we need to build a Ghanaian institution, right? A Ghanaian election commission that has embraced technology. Of course, with all the necessary controls in place to get this done. So I honestly believe that this is just the beginning of some very, very good things for Ghana and hopefully the rest of the continent. You know, as in Africa, can learn from our experience the journey to be able to digitize the election, even at the party level.
Before we leave, what is your message to the followers of your party, particularly those who are interested in this technology, who will be willing to learn not only in this field but in their future endeavors?
So that's actually a great question. Also, you've been asked a very, very pointed question. So. One thing I can tell you that our party really, as we hear, have embraced technology. You know, I've had dealings with pretty much all the what we call the regional chairman, right? One of my favorite ones, you know, Chairman Wuntumi of Ashanti Region, Chairman Kisi of Eastern Region, Chairman Putin of Central Region. These are the people who have been in the party and they've embraced it. They all do call me. So I honestly believe from the bottom of my heart the party knows the impact of technology, right? The ability to innovate, ability to now stand here and have international observers come in here and we click something and then all of a sudden, miraculously, magically, the pink sheet appears. And I like to do that for you to capture that, right? The pink sheet will appear. And the pink sheet actually, for in Ghana, is actually the key legal document, right, of all the elections. So if you are actually bringing your pink sheet in, you are making sure the pink sheet is the source of your data. There's no way that you'll be wrong, you have any deviation from the EC. And that's what we saw today.
Joseph Anochi is the Information Technology Director for the Ghanaian Governing New Patriotic Party, NPP. He spoke with me from Accra. In Togo, civil society groups are demanding the immediate release of prominent opposition figure Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson. The groups plan a virtual press conference Monday to highlight what they say is the use of state institutions to silence dissent and clamp down on the opposition. Mrs. Johnson is accused of being part of a plot to overthrow the government and destabilize the West African country. Accusations, the groups say, are politically motivated. The 61-year-old faces up to 20 years in prison if convicted. Farida Bemba Namburema, a human rights defender in Togo, is a major proponent of the virtual press conference. She tells me that the charges against the opposition figure are trumped up and regrettable.
So the Togolese Civil League, which is a group of Togolese activists and society organizers, are organizing a Zoom press conference to touch base on the ongoing persecution of political leaders in Togo, especially Mrs. Dr. Johnson Ajamagbo, who is the only female political leader in Togo in terms of the only woman leading a political party and the only woman who has ever led a coalition of political parties against the Nyasimbe regime. And she became in 2010 the first woman who ran for president in Togo and is currently being accused by the military regime of Paul Nyasimbe of plotting against the state. And those charges are very serious because she may end up with a sentence as high as 20 years imprisonment. And this is a 61-year-old woman who has spent the past 30 years fighting for democracy and rule of law in Togo.
But what do you say to supporters of the government who are of the view that, yes, indeed, activities of Mrs. Ajamagbo-Johnson seek to undermine the social cohesion of Togolese as well as undermine the territorial integrity of the country, and that the state or the government for that matter is constitutionally mandated to protect the country's sovereignty and has to clamp down?
Ever since Riyad Mahr himself was president from 1957 till his death in 2005, and his son took over from 2005 till today, for 53 years, countless Togolese opposition leaders and activists have been sent in prison for the same charges. Whenever the government feels threatened by the political ability of an opponent, they automatically find a way to punish them for organizing against them, and they come up with those type of truncated charges. We have had numerous cases and instances in which political leaders have been charged with treason, have been charged with attempting a coup, have been charged with terrorism, but the government has never been able to prove those, and they ended up detaining them for months, if not years, without even trying them because they had no proof and the cases are empty. So we are using Togo to this type of prosecution. They are usually baseless. And even the type of information that the Togolese government is using to prosecute Mrs. Adjamangbo are nothing but fabrications. They claim to have found some documents in the house of one of the members of a coalition who planned the coup in 2020 by writing down on paper how they are going to do a coup, and the government finds out and comes and find the paperwork. These are just unrealistic, and it is a common thing the government of Togo does, and we are very much aware of it.
What entails in this press conference scheduled for Monday?
We want to inform international institutions and political leaders outside of Togo that our country is still ongoing a very vile form of repression and a very vile form of dictatorship. Togo is the only country that has not known political change since 1967, making us the oldest military regime in Africa. For the past 53 years, our country has been ruled by the same family, and we want people to understand that the semblance of quiet that is in Togo today is a time-ticking bomb, because the government, by clamping on civil rights, is further infuriating the masses who are tired of being brutalized by the same regime for 5 decades. So we want this press conference to be an opportunity to provide updates to international media, to raise awareness on the ongoing human rights abuses in Togo, and to call for the immediate release of Mrs. Adjamangbo as well as all political prisoners in Togo.
After that, what happens next?
We have been fighting to have our rights respected in Togo. So we have a series of actions that we have planned. In addition to the press conference, which is part of our media strategy, we have many other things planned, such as organizing people at the grassroots level to demand change and to demand the release of Mrs. Adjamangbo, such as doing advocacy towards international, regional and sub-regional institutions such as the ECOWAS and the African Court of Human and People's Rights. We are also exercising pressure on foreign countries that have economic partnership with Togo and are calling for those governments to stop sponsoring the dictatorship in Togo and by demanding the release of our political prisoners. So we have different strategies. We have an engagement strategy, an advocacy strategy, a media strategy, and we also have a judicial strategy, because we are taking those cases to regional courts, because we know that there is no rule of law in Togo and our political prisoners can never find and obtain justice in Togo.
Farida Bemba Namburema is a human rights defender in Togo and a major proponent of the virtual press conference. She spoke with me from the capital, Lome. The deputy leader of Zambia's opposition movement for multi-party democracy, or MMD, is denying media reports that the party's presidential candidate, Neves Mumba, was in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo to meet former President Joseph Kabila. Mr. Mumba was reportedly arrested and questioned by the country's security officers following a meeting he attended in the DRC. Part of the objective of his trip, the report says, was for the MMD leader to seek financial support for the opposition party ahead of next year's general election. But Reverend Ruben Sambo, deputy leader of the MMD, denies the report. He tells me that the party's leader was on a personal trip to the DRC, adding that reports that he sought financial support for the group are false.
Well, thank you very much, Peter, for asking. I can confirm that, yes, Dr. Neves Mumba did travel to the DRC, but he did not travel to meet former President Kabila, and he has not had a single meeting with former President Kabila. He does not know him in person. He indeed has been asked questions by the security forces there and has been asked to remain within Congo until they clear their questions. But the questions are related to a meeting he attended last month in which the government of Katanga invited him to be the guest of honor at a meeting called the Sempia Organization. It is alleged that from that meeting he may have met a particular general they didn't want him to meet or something like that. So they've asked him questions around that, and he has been very clear that he was at every time the guest of the government of Lubumbashi, and he did not at any time meet the said general.
Is your party in touch with him, and when does he return home? Has he accomplished his task for which he went to the DRC, your neighboring country?
Yes, indeed. I have been in touch myself with him this morning. He is in good spirits. He's in good health. He is in his hotel room. And we are hopeful that the Katanga province government will actually let him have his passage this morning, because they did ask him not to travel until they are cleared with whatever questions they had for him. He is definitely traveling back, we hope, this morning, as soon as they are done with their clearance.
According to the report, he is being controversial, he is always up to something, and that Zambians should not trust him with the country's leadership come next year's elections. What is your reaction to this assessment of him?
Well, the good part of that report is that he is viewed as a serious contender to the leadership of our country. But in fact, what is false is that he's a controversial leader. This is one of the most level-headed senior leaders of our country. These things are bound to happen to any leader worth his salt, who is pushing for, you know, decency in leadership in his country and so forth. Dr. Mumba does obviously have a fair share of his own issues with either those who are in government and other leaders who are jostling for political power. But what is important to say is that Dr. Mumba is a leader who can be trusted, a leader who has demonstrated level-headedness in terms of how he approaches the subject of governance. And we continue to believe that the Zambian people will trust him when his time comes.
There are suggestions, Reverend Sambo, that he went to neighboring DRC to seek financial support for the party ahead of next year's general election. Is there any truth to it?
The fact of the matter is that Dr. Mumba did not go to raise party money from the DRC. Dr. Mumba does, from time to time, his own personal private business, and it is understandable that he could travel anywhere to do that kind of business. The MMD has its own traditional ways of raising its money, including subscription from its members, which is going on very well. Well-wishers also do donate. But in this particular case, to be just to be clear, he did not go to raise money for the party ahead of the 2021 general election.
Reverend Reuben Sambo is deputy leader of the Zambian Opposition Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, or MMD. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Simpuga and music from our African collection. But first, Professor Frank Taolu, a prominent Malawian gynecologist, has launched an initiative to improve women's health. The initiative targets mainly women in rural areas. They are screened for diseases including cervical cancer and breast cancer. Analysts say at least 80% of women in Malawi do not voluntarily get tested for ailments that may be linked to these illnesses. Professor Taolu treats the women for free. He has since launched a fundraising drive for support for the initiative. To learn more about plans to expand healthcare for Malawian village women, I reach Professor Taolu.
This is initiative is actually, you know, organized and run by a group which is called Shamaka. This is a group of volunteers. We are fundraising so that we can go in the rural areas. We've already started, actually, to screen so that women don't develop cancers, mainly cervical cancer, because we noted that with my work, I work at Queen Elizabeth Hospital, which is one of the tertiary hospitals, a lot of the cancer cases in rural areas, there's no access for screening.
How have the women been reacting to this initiative?
It's amazing. The reaction has been very, very positive. And what we do, so we decided to be going during the weekends, and I can just share with you, the last weekend, we screened over 325 women, that is between Saturday and Sunday. So the reaction from the women is very, very positive.
When you screen them, do you also provide medical help? Where do you go from here after screening them and there's a problem?
Fantastic question. We don't only go and do the screening for cancer, but we have a holistic approach that we check their health, we check their blood pressures, and also we examine them to rule out any medical conditions. I'll give you an example of a woman we saw who had a swelling in her armpit. We took a biopsy, that is a bit of tissue. We sent it away because we were worried what it was. And then we took it with us to our special lab in Blantyre. And it came out that actually it was not cancer. It was what we call schistosomiasis or bilharzia. So there's a linkage, you know, between the rural hospitals, us, and then the facilities where we can get the results. Within a week, we get the results of the biopsies which we are taking. So in essence, it's not only cancer, but also we pick up things like growth of the womb, what we call fibroids. So all this is actually giving value to the women in the rural areas that their health is well looked after than just looking at one particular entity of a disease, but the woman as a whole human being.
Do you plan on expanding this initiative to cover more villages in Malawi?
Exactly. We are going to do all the 28 districts we have in Malawi, but that would depend on the assistance which we are getting from the well-wishers. This is actually not funded by government per se, but we are going to colleagues, well-wishers, companies like the banks and all the private sector to help us with little money so that we can buy equipment. It can help us with transport to go to the rural areas. So depending on how much we're going to be raising, then our plan is to cover each and every corner of this beautiful country, Malawi.
Professor Taolu, some Malawians I spoke with are of the view that this initiative should be applauded and should need both local or domestic and international support. What are your thoughts about this?
I think that would be most welcome. We're looking for assistance from all corners of well-wishers. At the moment, you know, our grouping, we signed a memorandum of understanding that we're going to do this, and we're not just doing it in isolation without the Minister of Health involvement. But what we're looking for is the cash. We need the money because it's a very expensive program. As I said, Malawi is big, and the villages are quite in remote areas. We have support. One of car companies deal in Malawi. They have assisted us with transport, but that's not adequate. So for both local and international, assistance would be most welcome, because for this to happen, we need the resources, and the resources are from the people. So we are pleading mainly with the banks and the private sector, and also at international level, if there are people who want to work with us, join us on this bandwagon, they're most welcome to join us so that we fight this disease, mainly the cancers of women. Mainly the one which is so rampant in Malawi is that of cancer of the cervix.
So moving forward, what will be your message to the people of Malawi, particularly those in the rural areas, and to the volunteers who volunteer their time and resources to back and support you in this initiative?
For us, all we are saying, let me not forget to mention our biggest partner in all this, the media. The media fraternity in Malawi are selling this product, this project, very, very well, making people aware, that is looking at our sponsors, well wishes, and also sensitization to the rural masses. So all I'm saying is that for the people in the rural areas, when you hear that the team is coming in your area, please spread the message to the rest of the people in your area that the team is coming to screen.
Professor Frank Taulo is a prominent Malawian gynecologist. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. The International Organization for Migration rejects allegations that it is complicit in the forcible return of Eritrean refugees being held in one of its transit centers in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. For the UAE, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Media reports have said the International Organization for Migration is holding Eritrean refugees in one of its three transit centers in Addis Ababa. Recent news reports also accuse the agency of busing the refugees to an unknown destination. IOM spokeswoman Safa Micheli calls these charges patently untrue. She tells VOA that IOM's transit center was taken over by the Ethiopian government's Agency for Refugee and Returnee Affairs earlier this month.
IOM would like to clarify that the management of this center is effectively under the control of the government since the 3rd of December. IOM does not hold people anywhere in the world against their will, nor does it engage in forced return.
Micheli says the three transit centers IOM has been running in Addis Ababa for many years are there to assist stranded migrants, returnees, and people on the move who need temporary accommodation.
The government has requested IOM's support to temporarily accommodate a number of vulnerable refugees that were stranded in Addis Ababa while they review their individual out-of-camp options as per the government's out-of-camp policy. Until now, the center remains under the control of the government. IOM does not have any activities nor any control or authority over it.
In a statement Friday, Ethiopia's government said it was safely returning Eritrean refugees to the camps they had fled in the northern region of Tigray, where a battle has been raging since November 4th between government troops and the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The UN Refugee Agency manages four camps in Tigray, sheltering some 96,000 Eritrean refugees. It reports many refugees have fled the camps seeking safety from the fighting. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has expressed alarm about the safety and well-being of the refugees. In a statement, he said his agency had received numerous disturbing reports of Eritreans in Tigray being killed, abducted, and forcibly returned to their home country. If confirmed, he said, these actions would constitute a major violation of international law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Issa Hayatou is granted the status of honorary president of African football, CAF. Hayatou will be honored at a special ceremony in his home nation of Cameroon. He's the longest serving leader in CAF history, having led the African football body from 1988 to 2017. The 74-year-old was made an honorary vice president of FIFA after losing the elections 3 years ago, and now CAF is granting him the same honor. The decision to make Hayatou an honorary president was proposed by the executive committee, which the General Assembly approved on Friday. The ceremony will take place in Yaoundé on January 15th, a day before the African Nations Championship CHAN kicks off in Cameroon. Despite the coronavirus threat, CAF hopes to be able to fill stadiums to 25% of their capacities for CHAN, a tournament for African players based in their domestic leagues. Meanwhile, a date has been set in the first half of 2021 for the African Super Cup, which will be played by the continent's champions Al Ahly of Egypt and Confederation Cup winners RS Berkane of Morocco. The game will be played in Qatar. Meanwhile, Nanjing will host the World Athletics Indoor Championships in 2023 after the 2021 event was postponed because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The Chinese city had been scheduled to host the championships in March 2020, but that was pushed back to 2021. Nanjing will now host the event 1 year after the next World Indoor Championships in Belgrade in 2022. The event is usually biennial and was last held in Birmingham in 2018. The next World Athletics Indoor event is scheduled to be the World Indoor Tour, which begins in Germany on January 29th. And the South African cricket team will tour Pakistan for the first time in 13 years in 2021. The tour will run from January 26th to February 14th, but the team will have to quarantine on the arrival. The two tests will be played in Karachi and Rawalpindi, with all three TO20s held in Lahore. Sri Lanka, Bangladesh and Zimbabwe have toured Pakistan in the past 15 months after the country went 10 years without hosting Test cricket. South Africa won a two-match test series 1-0 on their last tour of Pakistan in 2007. And that's about it for this edition of Nelson Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. We'll be right back.
chukua anaweka wa
le général Tambodi
ana chukua anaweka wa
le grand Mbao
ana chukua anaweka wa
bosi Mbuka
ana chukua anaweka wa taramu kupendwa nani taramu nasikia taramu kupendwa nawe Maneno, maneno, sumea zoea Vijineno, neno, tusha zoea Opezi wa muhumbaya, kwa nina wausu Shepu ya kebaya, hivi na wausu Mtangati malaya, kwa ina wabusu Ninyo megusta babaya na wakavu Lazima wachuchumai, wamengia chakike Chakike Wamengia chakike, chakike Wamengia chakike
Kwa penzi letu
Chakike
Lazima watuchu
Wamengia chakike
Kwa penzi letu
Chakike
Makukote, magutani Don Mende Bajuni, H. Bajuni
Chumbani enesi Unipatia panano Wasenga za mesi Na mashuti ya Ronaldo Nani nikiingia tu
anachukua anaweka kwa
kwenye gari
anachukua anaweka
iwe jikoni au varandani
anachukua anaweka kwa
doze doze doze
anachukua anaweka
ndani ya salama joto toaleto jipepe oya kongo joto toaleto jipepe
oya mose kuna mimi
Mr. Gio Yasuka, Mr. Gio Mukwano. wine, wine, don't spread out and wine.
Why me? Do belly dance with me, do belly dance with me. Wine up your body, girl, get in a chance with me. You say you want to see me, come on and ask me. Me have a stick for your champion.
Me want you feel don't spread out and wine your body. Jump, red out and wine, wine. Jump, red out and wine, your body, body. Jump, red out and wine, wine. Jump, red out and wine, your body. Jump, red out and wine, wine. Jump, red out and wine, your body, body. Jump, red out and wine,
wine.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Accra. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Saleh, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the dance of a madman at the market square is only funny when he is not your family member. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.